Yeah, as much, please.
You should also feel free to come for part of it if you can't come for the whole thing. I think what we hope to do is that people would only ring the bell at the 45 minutes after the hour during our break part, so that actually the meditation is going to be really calm throughout. But so 45 minutes after the hour to the hour is a break, and at any point from 7 to midnight you can come for a bit of it or all of it.
Right. There's no obligation to stay here for the entire 5 hours. And, of course, everything is by donation. So if you have low money or none, don't worry about it. It's all just here for you. So, yeah, there's so many wonderful benefits to the spiritual life that we talk about. Virtuousness, meditation, right speech, right action. Just meditation alone, there's so many studies that show the incredible benefits. UCLA just did a study showing that when people meditate, they don't trigger a part of the brain called the amygdala, which reduces drastically the amount of stress. And as a result, people who meditate regularly wind up experiencing less hypertension, less arteriosclerosis and artery hardening. They actually have shown that people who meditate produce more white blood cells. So we fight off infections. It's a wonderful part of, in fact, I think that most research points that meditation along with healthy diet and healthy exercise are the three cornerstones to the input we have to bring quality to our life. Not only longevity, but a worthwhile life, a life for the mind that feels calm and relaxed. There's studies that show that meditation and mindfulness are extremely effective in working with anxiety and panic attacks. Working with the breath is one of the few tools and techniques that help when people have disabling panic attacks, because it one of the parts of the panic attacks that cause so much damage is we don't realize that we're hyperventilating. And not to mention all the studies that show that people who meditate have report greater baseline happiness, fewer incidents of suicidal ideation and depression. So there's a million reasons to meditate, and yet in life, so many people choose to put things ahead of their spiritual practice. I have a word for those things that we tell ourselves are important, that we follow. It's a word that will be new to some of you. It's called the shoulds. The shoulds. These little belief systems that we have shoulds, and many of our shoulds not only conflict with our spiritual path, but they conflict with the other shoulds that we have. For example, many people have a should that they should please their parents, they should worry about what their parents think about them, they should serve their country, they should do whatever their spiritual teachers tell them. Please don't do that. They should put money away for their futures and their IRA all the time. They should be married. They should have children. They should live in a nice place. We should care about the economy, the environment. We carry around an enormous amount of shoulds. And one of the beauties of going away on a retreat which is why their retreat practice is so prevalent in Buddhism, is that when you go away, we drop the shoulds for a while. The only should you have on retreat is you should try to be comfortable. And when we return from a retreat, we often see just how much stress each should we carry in our lives are. People go into therapy, and they have the should, I should be happy, but I also should make my parents proud of me, but I also should have a career, but I also should pursue my art. And so they have shoulds tugging at them every which way. Often our shoulds fight against our desires. For instance, they should be in a monogamous relationship, but they also want to sleep around. People have sex and get pregnant, and then they believe they should get married, though one or both of them don't really want to get married in certain cultures. So we have all these shoulds, tugging, pulling, and each should adds stress and adds a story. And very many times in our lives, we're falling short of our shoulds. We should make our dad like everything that we do and approve of us, but no matter how much we try, he doesn't. No matter how much we yearn for love from our mother or from our boss or from our whatever, sometimes we just can't get anything from it. It's like trying to get orange juice from a stone. Part of the problem is that the shoulds we're in our life very often responding to are all pointing in opposite directions. Certain people have the shoulds of their culture, the shoulds of their family, the shoulds of their own internal drives and beliefs of who they should be in their life. I should accomplish something before I die that's noteworthy, but I also should be a doctor just like my mother wanted me to, and I should be married by now, and I should have kids by now. So you see, all these shoulds are pulling people in different directions. And this causes an enormous amount of strain. Not only do we have these, each should has its own emotional agitation, its own mental story which we have to carry, which is agitation, but then the shoulds are conflicting, causing drama, causing a sense of internal strife. There's an internal war often between the should of wanting to be economically viable or viable in one arena, and yet another should of wanting to experience life and wanting to just throw off responsibility and enjoy our life while we have it. So we have these tugging shoulds pointing in different directions, and it becomes very difficult to work out often what we should do. Because when you have different directions and different things that we're answering to, it's very difficult to weigh what should we should follow. For example, if we have one should that tells us that we should put away money to our retirement, and another should that says, no, I hate my job, I want to be an artist, fuck this, then we have two things totally in different planes and different fields that have very little to do with each other. And it's very difficult to weigh the should of my future security and the should of my present enjoyment of my life and following my artistic yearnings. And all the shoulds generally that we get loaded onto, the family shoulds, the shoulds, I should go out with my friends when they call me from the bar. I should get back together with my family over the holidays. I should I should care about what they say about me at work. I should, etc., etc., etc. You get the idea. So, contrary to popular belief, the Buddha actually did have shoulds, but they're very, very different. Now, when I say the Buddha had shoulds, I actually will qualify that, because the Buddha always said in his suttas, if you want to be happy, then you should do this. Now, nobody's telling you that you should be happy. In fact, if you don't want to have lasting peace, if you think, for example, it's more important to have a lot of money in the bank, or a career is more important than spiritual practice, lots of people do make these sacrifices. This is not, it sounds, to me, it sounds funny, because I could never picture myself putting my career above my spiritual practice, but people do that all the time. And I'm not criticizing, I'm just simply saying the Buddha's shoulds only point in one direction. And that's one of the reasons why they're so easy to work with, because they're not pulling you towards appeasing a god. They're not, the Buddha didn't posit a god. They're not telling you that you should do everything that this person or that person says. You shouldn't try to become popular. You shouldn't worry about it. All that stuff is not important. So many of the shoulds that we're answering to get immediately wiped off the table. And the Buddha replaces them with shoulds that he say are only in place if you want lasting peace of mind. That's the single direction. So all of the shoulds in Buddhism are pointing in one direction. They're not pointing towards making your parents happy, or making your country happy, or making a god happy, or making the army happy, or making the IRS happy, or making your retirement banker happy. They're not pulling you in different directions. Every should the Buddha taught was about one thing: how to make you lastingly happy. That's it. So just starting there, if you, every should is pointing in the same direction, it makes them a lot more easy to weigh which ones you want to practice, because you're not being pulled and tugged in all these different directions. The first three shoulds that the Buddha said, if we want to be, the first three shoulds he taught were the three G's, which is generosity, gratitude, and goodwill. Now, generosity, gratitude, and goodwill are not just good ideas that have real merit that will, if we practice them, a lot of clinical studies show people who practice gratitude and good and generosity, actually positive psychologists and clinical studies show that these people who do those, who practice generosity, actually wind up much happier than people who don't. But there's a real strategy behind them as well. The Buddha taught that the three defilements, the three things that cause us the most suffering, are greed, believing that our happiness comes from outside, and if we just get enough stuff, things, people, praise, money, that we'll be happy. That's greed. Then there's the other defilement, which is hatred, that belief that I'll be happy only if this person goes away, dies, is out of my face, if only I didn't have to deal with that thing in my life. And then there's self-centeredness, the third, which is the belief that happiness comes about by endlessly thinking about ourselves, trying to figure out who we are, what we should be, why we're more important, all that. So generosity, gratitude, and goodwill undermine the three defilements directly. If you're practicing generosity, it's very, very hard to be greedy at the same time you're being generous. If you're practicing gratitude, reflecting on all the people that have helped you in your life, it's very, very difficult to be self-centered and believe that you're in it all alone. And if you're practicing goodwill, it's very, very hard to practice hatred at the same time. So all these three things directly undermine the defilements that cause us suffering. Now, the one that most of us have most difficult with, most people I know can actually be very, very generous, and they're okay with the idea of goodwill, but gratitude often causes us a little bit of difficulty. Some people believe that we've been victimized, or that we've got it tough, or that we're alone. But I guarantee you that everybody sitting here has had somebody at some point in their life take care of them. Because just by the fact that you're here at Dharma Punks on a 20 degree night, when it would have been easier to do anything else, shows that you really care about your mental state of health, your inner peace, your tranquility, that you understand that that's something that's worthwhile to pursue, and you're interested in it. And only somebody who'd had somebody who took the time out to instill those values in them would be here. We all have had people who have made it possible for us to practice. We've all had people that have taken care of us. So we even have people that have just, we admire, that show us that living a life based on moral or gentle principles is worthwhile in a world that's so filled with people who don't meditate and who act out of greed. The fact that we're here means that somebody has really done something for us. Because nobody who came from a background of where there was no love and no caring would wind up here. Somewhere we all had that planted in us. Somewhere we all became motivated towards our own spiritual happiness. So reflecting on that, making it seem like we're less alone, less in it all by ourselves, that we're less isolated, that we're connected, that we've been helped, not only undermines that self-centeredness, that victimization that so many of us carry, that feeling of the universe is out to get me or I'm all alone, but it creates a mind that's much more open and much more peaceful. Likewise, the states of feeling goodwill for others. When you feel goodwill, the energy in the body is relaxed. There's no cortisol. The mind is comfortable. When we feel, on the other hand, hatred, when we feel feelings of, oh, if only this one person was not in my life or didn't exist, then I'd be happy. Then we're making our happiness contingent upon someone else's suffering, and the energy in the mind becomes one of stress and agitation. So again, there's a real cause and effect. None of this we're doing because we want to make any God happy, or because we want to make the Buddha, who's now dead, happy, or because we want to be goody two-shoes. There's none of that to it. The reason for all of these actions, the shoulds in Buddhism, are one, which is to attain lasting peace of mind. I'm not telling you to do this because I want it. I'm telling you this because I know that it will be good for you, like it's been good for me. So it's all guiding us in the same direction. We're not being tugged about, we're not being torn about, we're not being pulled in different directions. We can weigh whether we are being too generous or too grateful or too have too much goodwill when only one thing happens, when we start experiencing stress, when it starts backfiring on us. It's not a matter of seeing if somebody else is happy or if some God is pleased with us or if the country or the army likes you. We can tell when we've gone too far because our mental balance is pulled out of place. Which brings about another shuddha the Buddha taught, which was upekkha or equanimity, balance. Remembering that there's only so much we can do to help anyone else, and that eventually they have to be the owners of their own happiness and lasting peace of mind. upekkha, or balance, is the Buddha's saying, if we are trying to become too helpful, too involved in other people's lives, we're trying to save the world, we're trying to fix everything in our lives right now, then we're going to start experiencing stress. We're going to start experiencing more agitation. And that's how we know that we've thrown the mind out of whack. So again, you don't have to start weighing it against other things or looking towards, you know, ask, well, how much does somebody else meditate? How much does that person meditate? How much does that person give? How much does that person express gratitude? How much does that person do the metta meditation? It's not about comparing yourself with others. It's not about competing with anyone else. It's not about, there's no chart that tells you how many hours a day you should meditate or minutes a day you should meditate. There's no chart telling you how grateful you should be. There's no chart telling you how much generosity or goodwill you should practice. The only barometer is your own long-term peace of mind. That's what we're aiming for here. Now, people think, well, that sounds sort of selfish, right? I mean, doing all this for myself. But that's the beauty of it, which is that when we attain inner peace, we naturally spread that to other people. When we care about ourselves, when we attain peace of mind, when we find lasting happiness, we don't hurt or harm other beings. We don't selfishly try to get our happiness from outside of ourselves. We don't try to waste the earth's resources. We don't try to hog up material things. We don't worry about things that are unessential. When we experience true inner peace, that's the time that we naturally want to share it with people. But if you try to save the world when you don't have inner peace, it's not going to work out. I have done a lot of volunteer work in my life, and I can guarantee you, every place you go, you run into people who stress themselves out, burn themselves out trying to fix and solve everything. And that doesn't work. So we've got to keep the barometer on lasting, not temporary, but lasting peace of mind. The Buddha said the one question you should ask a wise monk when you run into a wise monk, which I'm sure you do every day, but if you do run into a wise monk, the one question you should ask is, what should I do that will make me experience lasting peace of mind? That's where all of the shoulds point to. Finally, the last shoulds that I'll mention then are the what will be the intentions that we'll be taking, the precepts on New Year's Eve. When people hear the precepts, the five precepts of not killing, not stealing, not lying or practicing harmful speech, not causing harm through intoxication, and not causing harm through sex. When they hear that, it reminds us often of the Ten Commandments, the Golden Rules, thou shouldst, all those shoulds that we've experienced in our life, which we've heard. A lot of them don't make sense in other times we've heard them because we get the feeling that, well, this law is not for my benefit. The teachers at school tell me that I should keep quiet because it makes their life easier, but I feel like making noise. My parents tell me I shouldn't fuck around, but I feel like having fun. The world tells me that I should have a career that makes lots of money so that I can save for my retirement and save for my children, but I don't feel like doing that. I want to have fun. I want to spend my 20s jerking off and shooting up dope and whatever. Whatever. I'm bringing my own biography in here. So anyway, these shoulds that the Buddha presents are not about some you know, thing that we're trying to appease that is not for our own benefit. There's no, you should serve your country, you should go to war, you should blah, blah, blah. The Buddha's shoulds are all based on the idea that if you do these things, you'll be happy in the long term. And so these five additional shoulds of refraining from killing, stealing, improper, hurtful speech, causing harm through sex and intoxication, is because the Buddha demonstrates in his early suttas, throughout the suttas, that people who kill and steal and lie wind up suffering. If you lie, you have to carry around a story of the alternate truth that you're creating. If you kill, you have put yourself in direct conflict with the rest of those beings that you've killed. You've made your happiness contingent upon someone else's suffering. If we steal, we've done the same. We've told ourselves that we can't be happy unless we take from another human being or another being. Those people who steal and kill and lie are by their actions saying that their happiness is contingent upon other beings suffering. Think about what that means. On the other hand, think about what it means to live in a mind that doesn't have any of that guilt, any of that that past, any of that energy that I have made my happiness from making other beings suffering. That's a feeling of lightlessness and blamelessness that is so lofty and wonderful that no amount of material goods could possibly replace it. Brings to mind that story of when Ringo Starr said that when he was in the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper's came out and he had more money and more drugs and more houses and women that he could possibly experience in one lifetime, and he still wasn't happy. He still felt empty. And it was only when he let go of pursuing all those material things and got sober and found a purpose in his life he started meditating and he started doing spiritual things, that he found a way to address that emptiness. So it's the same thing. If we let go of trying to take our happiness from outside and instead cultivate it within by practicing generosity, gratitude, goodwill, meditation, and not causing harm to the outside world, we will find lasting peace of mind. So those are the shoulds, if you want to be happy. If you don't, you don't have to do any of them. And now it's your turn to share anything that comes to mind. So thanks for listening.
Hi.